Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But, well, we don't know what's going to happen. We were supposed to have with us today Mr. Frederick Forsyth, and Mr. Forsyth is an internationally known author. In fact, when I announced that he was going to be our guest on Radio Liberty, my secretaries commented that she had always enjoyed Mr. Forsyth's writing. She had read most of his books when she was still in high school, and he certainly writes very well. He's well aware of what's going on over in Europe and is very, very concerned about this move towards uniting Europe and destroying the structure, the sovereignty, not only of the United States, but of all of the nations of Europe. Now, you must understand that most of the people in Europe are very unhappy about what's going on. The people of Eastern Europe, who were so long under the heel of Russian tyranny, are very, very concerned when their leaders seem to be so intent upon actually taking them under this control. So what we really have to do is begin to get people to understand that there really are dark forces working out there, first of all trying to reunite Europe. And, of course, they sold it to the people of Europe. Oh, my goodness, all we really want to do is just have open market and free trade. What's wrong with that? And for a lot of people in Europe, just as a lot of people in the United States, who were very, very gullible, and they honestly believed that the European leaders were telling them the truth. Well, they were not interested in free trade. They were interested in using free trade as a stepping stone to a common currency and then a common government with the common courts and common police and common Gestapo to control every aspect of human endeavor within the European common market, within the European community. And the same thing is going on here in the United States as they lie to the American people. Oh, all we want is free trade. Look at all those customers we're going to be able to get there in Mexico. They're all going to be buying American cars and American refrigerators. Now all we have to do is have NAFTA. And then, of course, we find out it was a lie. And now, of course, they want the free trade zones of the Americas. And, well, with us is Mr. Frederick Forsyth, and we're going to be talking about what's going on in Europe. Mr. Forsyth, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much for being with us.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You're coming through well.
Okay.
All right, fine. Well, we've already introduced you to our authors, and you've written a number of books through the years, haven't you?
I have indeed, yeah. I've been writing novels now for 30 years, and the first one, Day of the Jackal.
Right, The Day of the Jackal, because that was about Carlos, wasn't it?
No, that was about attempt to assassinate Charles de Gaulle.
Okay, fine, I remember that one. Okay, fine, well, of course, they're gripping novels anyway, but right now, of course, you're working with this group over in Great Britain trying to do something to stop the loss of British national sovereignty. Would you like to tell our listeners just a little bit about that?
Well, we have a thing over here called the European Union. It didn't start that way. Like all creeping malaise, it started with what seemed a very innocent free trade area. We were told 30 years ago that by our then Prime Minister, Edward Heath, that we were going to be joining a kind of a common market. And it was then called the European Economic Community, the EEC, which didn't sound particularly harmful. We were going to have a free trade zone where
hold that thought, please
come down.
Hold that thought for just a moment here when we bring some other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our special guest this afternoon is Mr. Frederick Forsyth, who's a well-known international author, and certainly one of his best-known books was The Day of the Jackal. And, of course, he's been writing novels for the last 30 years, but he's also involved with a group over in Great Britain who are very concerned about the fact that the government lied to them. Can you imagine that? And some 30 years ago, the Prime Minister, Mr. Heath, told the English people, well, we just want a free trade zone so we can trade with the other European country. What's wrong with a free trade zone? Wasn't that pretty well the way they sold it to you?
That was about it, yeah. We were told it was then called the European Economic Community, the EEC, and it was going to be a large area where traders could trade across national borders. There would be no tariff barriers anymore. Bureaucracy would be virtually dismantled between them, so we would be as equal, as easy to sell from Britain into Germany as from one English county into another English county. And that didn't sound too bad. So we said, as a nation, yes, okay, we agree, and we signed. It was not until around 15 years later it began to be plain, this is a lot more than that.
And I think that, of course, the people who were behind this really understood, but they couldn't tell the British people, or even the people of most of the European countries, what they really had in mind. Doesn't that bother you, that the fact that they lied to you intentionally?
I think obviously yes, and it's a growing awareness. It's not just me or a couple of guys. I think there's a big sea change going on among the broad masses of the people, not just of my own country here, but also the people of Western Europe, that they have been lied to so comprehensively now. They're getting pretty angry with it, and they notice now that what they were told was nothing like what appears to be the end game here. The end game does appear to be one single supranational European state with a capital of its own and a government of its own, a passport of its own, an anthem of its own, a constitution of its own, a president of its own, and so on through one currency, one law system, a whole range of things. We never signed up to any of this that we knew about. Apparently we did it covertly. It was done behind closed doors, and we're getting a bit angry about that.
Well, I would think with good reason, but the difficulty is that there is a small group of people who have a different agenda. These people want a different sort of world, and they honestly believe if we had a supranational government, not only in Europe, but here in the Western Hemisphere, they're doing the same thing in the Western Hemisphere, and in Asia, then they could, of course, unite these three major blocks into this one big, happy world dictatorship, because really what happens is the people lose their freedom. The further away the structure of government is away from the local community, the less we have to say about it. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest is Frederick Forsyth, who is the author of The Day of the Jackal and many other exciting novels that, of course, have intrigued people throughout the world, and I know many people who are great admirers of Mr. Forsyth's writing, but today he's talking to us about what's happening as far as the move towards the European community. Let me just play the devil's advocate for a minute. What would be wrong with having a European government, central government, so we could put an end to wars, and that we don't want any more terrible wars, as we've seen the First World War and the Second World War. Wouldn't this be advantageous if we just had one central authority, one central government, and then everybody could live in peace?
Well, it would be a nice idea, but there are several things that are in fact wrong with that, I believe. One of the claims made is that the European Union has kept the peace in Europe for these past 50 years. Well, anyone who's been around, and I have been around in Europe these past 50 years, know that the threat came not from inside Europe, it came from the Soviet Union, and what kept the peace was NATO. It had nothing to do, whatever, with Brussels or the European Union. It was NATO kept the peace. And there's been not a shred of evidence or reason why any West European country should even wish to attack a neighbor these past 50 years, and the same applies to this day. But when you talk about what one might call unions or confederations, they work when they take place by the consent of the people, which is what the founding fathers of America were very keen to obtain, the consent of the people. When they are forced, as the Soviet Union was forced upon the people, then they are very unstable, and we have just seen the breakup of the Yugoslav Federation in war, bloodshed, ethnic cleansing, violence, and mutual internecine hatred. And there is no need for that. I take the view, and a lot of people do, that it is not democracies that provoke aggressive wars. It is dictatorships. And therefore, if we cherish our democracies, we will not be fighting each other. So The idea of a French democracy hurling itself at a British democracy next door is, I think, crazy talk.
And I really think...
We must keep our democracies. What I worry about is that democracy seems to be dying. As the thing gets bigger and bigger and bigger, accountable democracy gets further and further away and is more or less a dying beast.
Well, of course, we talked to a gentleman the other day about this gentleman who was a shopkeeper, and he was actually fined and threatened with all sorts of terrible reprisals because he sold a pound of bananas rather than a kilo of bananas or a quarter of a kilo of bananas. In other words, what they're trying to do is regulate every aspect of human endeavor from Brussels. Isn't this really something that increasingly the people are becoming aware of? That they're really not talking about simply a free trade, they're talking about control over every aspect of life?
Well, this seems to be what I think that we are disagreeing with over here. We skeptics who dispute the right of any government to give away what it does not own, which is to say the country, because by law you cannot clearly obviously give away or trade or donate what you do not own, and the politicians do not own our country. That we lend them the power, as you do over in America, for a given period of time, and then they have to submit themselves to the will of the people yet again, which is what's going on in America today. So if I can remind you of a British author who wrote a book called 1984, and the figure of fear in 1984 was Big Brother. And Big Brother is getting very big, looming very large now, out of Brussels, wishing to affect all our lives and dominate all our actions and tell us what we shall do from the moment we get up in the morning to the moment we go to bed at night.
Well, now, of course, you mentioned earlier that there is a growing movement against this among the people, but, of course, the other side seems to pretty well dominate the media. Are you able to reach the people by other means so that the people are becoming aware of the fact that they are going to lose their freedom? They've lost a little now, but if this thing progresses, you'll lose your monetary freedom, or you'll lose your economic freedom, you'll lose your national freedom, you'll lose your personal freedom.
Well, I think, yes, I'm not too worried about the position of the media, because the media is split pretty well evenly down the middle. We do have newspapers and radio networks here and TV stations who share my own view of this one, that it has gone too far, and we certainly ought now to be looking to repatriate competences and parliamentary powers that were taken away from us. There's the other half of the media take the opposite view, that we haven't gone far enough and so on. So there is a debate going on, a very lively and sometimes fractious debate. In Western Europe, there has been a sort of a stunned consensus silence, an absolute absence of any dissentient voice, any criticism, for years and years now. That is beginning to end. We are seeing riots. We are seeing people now saying, wait a minute, enough is enough, and enough, we've been lied to, we don't like it. French people are saying it, Dutch people are saying it, Germans are saying it. They were always previously the most obedient to their new masters. Now there's a kind of voter revolt going on, a kind of a mutiny. And it may be that the people who thought they had us under their thumb for the rest of time are going to get a very nasty shock.
Well, of course, in so many of the countries of Europe, they have very socialist economies, and they provide for the people from the cradle to the grave, and they have their wonderful pension system and wonderful medical system, but they don't have enough money to keep this thing going. My understanding is that they're actually insisting that German workers work longer hours, oh heavens, and not getting any additional pay, and they're going to begin cutting back on some of all these benefits, because, of course, the countries over there not only morally bankrupt, they're financially bankrupt. Do you think this is what, of course, is getting the people out in the streets and demonstrating?
I don't think, well, bankrupt is going too far, Dr. Stan. They're nowhere near bankrupt. I would say, however, that, for example, in the Eurozone, which is not, the British has not joined, we did not abolish the pound sterling. We still own the pound sterling. But 12 of the 15 countries then members did indeed abolish their national currencies and adopt one single currency to share between them. It's called the Euro. So that's called the Eurozone. Well, in the Eurozone, 40% of the economy is Germany. And Germany's economy is sick as a parrot. And they have real bad, bad problems there. They have 5 million unemployed, which is 1 million more than when Adolf Hitler came to power. And they do, as you say, have a cradle-to-grave system of Social Security, which is so expensive that they cannot. It's using up money faster than they can generate it. So they're moving further and further into debt. Their deficits are now beyond the prescribed limits. of 3% per annum. It's now 3.9% and rising. And already the reforms the government is forced to put through are causing the riots. The riot people are coming out on the street and saying, hey, you can't do this to me. I'm accustomed to never being fired. I'm accustomed to never being laid off. I'm accustomed to getting 90% of my salary for 3 years after I'm made redundant. I'm accustomed to this, that, and the other. What they are not yet facing, they're going to have to face it soon, is the baby boomers, the guys who were born just after the Second World War ended. They are coming into pensionable retirement age, and they're going to say, okay, I'm 60 now, I'm laying down my job, I now claim my pension. And the answer is, there are no pension funds there, Dr. Stan. They've used them up on Social Security. And when that happens, there are serious voices. I'm not talking about idiots. I'm talking about very serious economic voices here saying there's likely to be a kind of an explosion. You cannot deprive people of their pensions if they've paid for them all their lives.
Well, unfortunately, if there's no money, then what do you do? And this is the real problem you face not only where you are over here. It's estimated we all have $72 trillion in deficits. In other words, we owe that amount of money for Medicare and Social Security over the next 20 or 30 years, and no possible way to pay it. But we can't tell the American people, and I'm sure that's really what's going on in Europe. How about in Great Britain? How are you fixed financially as far as your socialist programs? Are they viable? Are you going to be under a deluge of baby boomers retiring and beginning to create increasing instability as well?
Well, here's what's so weird about our situation. 30 years ago, or 33 years ago, Mr. Van Edward Heath, as he was, he was terrified that we were economically the sick man of Europe. And Germany was having its economic miracle. Germany was the boom country. Germany was the guys to get involved with to save your ass, so to speak. So he thought that our salvation lay in kind of blending ourselves into this new, as he saw it, this new superstate yet to be. What's happened in 30 years is the reverse has happened. We are now the prosperous guys. We are the guys who pay our way in the world. We're the guys who are subsidizing the rest of Europe and getting very fed up with doing it, while Germany is the reverse. Her economic miracle is a long-distant memory. She is now the sick man of Europe. So, we in Britain are actually more prosperous than the rest of Europe, and the gap is widening. Unfortunately, our present government, the Blair government, which I know is very popular in the States because Mr. Blair sided, with the White House over Iraq, but over here, that same government is deeply unpopular because it has raised taxes by over 100 billion sterling a year, and virtually destroyed our pensions industry and is dragging us down slowly towards the European level. Many of us want to be free to operate in what I call a free market economy, the Anglo-Saxon model economy, and we think we would prosper far more if we did than if we were tied, so to speak, to the great mill wheel of Europe.
Well, of course, now, do you have any effective opposition, at least as far as the Tory? Do they still call them the Tory, the Conservatives? Are they
Conservatives, yes, nicknamed the Tories.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, is there going to be a lot of difference there if the Tories were to get in, or would they continue many of the same policies? Here in the United States, we have two political parties both headed in the same direction, and of course, you can vote for one or you can vote for the other, but all of their policies are basically the same. One wants to spend $200 billion for new programs. The other wants to spend $2 trillion. The other wants to spend $3 trillion, something like that. Billion, trillion. These figures become so unreal. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Mr. Frederick Forsyth. And the question will be, is there an alternative to the two major political parties in Great Britain? Or, certainly, what about this new movement that he is associated with? A third party which is beginning to actually gain some backing. In fact, they had an amazing vote recently when they were electing representatives of the European market. But we'll have Mr. Forsyth tell us about that when we get back here in just a moment. Right here at Radio Liberty, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, Ear to Global Occupation. his second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaa will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaa.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tierney. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this afternoon, Mr. Frederick Forsyth, with us from Great Britain. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, Mr. Forsyth, will it make any difference if, of course, Tony Blair were to win and the Conservative would get in? Certain people within the Conservative Party are just as dedicated to this idea of the European Union as the Liberals are, aren't they?
Well, yes, it's a little more complex than that, I understand. Basically, there are three main parties over here, and they said, well, you have two. There is the Labour Party presently in power, which is excessively, or at the top end, pro the EU, pro European integration. But they are split. They have a split. They have around one third of their members out in the countryside, and the activists, and even in London, who are opposed to it. Then you've got the Conservative parties, who are about 90% opposed. The people you referred to inside the Conservative Party, around 10% rump, are, so to speak, Euro-Federalists. And then we have the Liberal Democrats, and they are almost 100% Euro-Federalists. So if at the next election, which we think will take place in May, around 5 months after your election, if the Conservatives were to win, then we would see a complete new policy, probably a renegotiation of terms, being presented with our relationship with Western Europe.
No.
If it's Blair again, then we can expect more moves towards Euro integration.
Well, now, what's the tone over there? My understanding, at least reading the American newspapers, is that Tony Blair has lost a lot of capital, his personal capital, because, of course, he's had to come forward and admit that he didn't tell the British people the real truth about why we went to war in Iraq, or maybe he was misled by the wicked Americans.
Well, I think there's an no. He wasn't misled by the wicked Americans. We, I think, broadly speaking, believed that there was a case. There was a case, okay, to go in and topple one of the cruelest and most bloody dictators on the planet. But Tony Blair didn't come to us and say that. He came to us and said this man was an ongoing danger, a clear and present danger. He had massive quantities of weapons of mass destruction. He could launch them in 45 minutes. He could throw them as far as Western Europe, which was complete rubbish, and that he had seen documentation that proved this. And on that basis, he got Parliament to approve sending British troops to war. It later became quite clear that there were no weapons of mass destruction. There had never been any facility for launching them inside 45 minutes. And even if he'd launched what he got, they only would have landed in the desert a few hundred yards away because he had no launch systems. Now, what is clear that has come out in the last 6 months is he was never told anything like different from that. The intelligence services, whom he's now trying to blame, did not say any such thing. So he went into the House of Commons over here, which is like your House of Representatives, and he stood and he told blatant untruths. Now that is a resigning matter over here. You just can't do that. And the last time it was done, there's no question about it, it was done by Anthony Eden over the Suez invasion, 1956, when Dwight D. Eisenhower opposed us, quite rightly as it turned out, and Eden had to resign. Now this man is not resigning, he's clinging to power. But already half his own party want him to go, the whole of the opposition party want him to go, and he is in kind, there is talk that he's actually falling, his star is falling.
Oh.
Although he's a hero in America because he sort of sided with America on the attack on Iraq, he is not a hero over here, partly because of the rotten way the country's being run, partly because, frankly, you just do not lie to our parliament and walk away grinning your head off. You just can't do it.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, is the prime minister in Great Britain, is he elected by the people or is he elected by his party?
Well, basically, the party over here, we don't have a president, obviously we have a queen, so our head of government, your head of state is your head of government, all in one role, it's the president. We have a head of state, who is her, Queen Elizabeth. We have a head of government, and he is the head of the party that wins the biggest share of the seats in the general election. So the biggest share. So if we have 659 seats. One is dedicated to the Speaker, which is uncontested, so 658, and divided up roughly between three parties. And he got a majority. So he got a majority, he heads the winning party, he gets to be Prime Minister.
Well, now, what about this new party that you're part of? I assume that you're part of it, or at least you're well aware of it.
I know. I get your drift, but no, I am a conservative. I ain't no bones about that. But there is a new party. It's called the UKIP, which stands for United Kingdom Independence Party, and that is a kind of pretty extreme radical group who have one policy, but only one policy, and that is let us get out of Europe altogether.
All right, fine. Well, we'll talk more about that when we get back and whether or not they're going to be able to play any part in the upcoming elections. Hold on, and we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about. Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war. Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Hi, my name is Michael Anthony Perugia, and I approved this ad. I'm seeking the presidential nomination of the Constitution Party, and one of the reasons I'm running is to put the interest of American workers first, which President Bush is not doing. Mr. Bush has advocated an immigration plan that would let millions of illegal aliens stay in our country, and the chairman of his Council of Economic Advisors has praised what is called outsourcing, which will send millions of American jobs overseas. In other words, Mr. Bush is importing illegal cheap labor and exporting good-paying jobs that should stay in America. Well, this makes no sense. Such policies are outrageous at a time when so many Americans are looking for jobs and want to work. The sad fact is that neither the Republicans nor the Democrats are looking out for American workers first. As president, I would put our people first. I hope you'll look at my webpage, Perutka2004.com, that's P-E-R-O-U-T-K-A 2004.com, and remember, you never waste your vote when you vote for what's right.
Authorized and paid for by Perutka 2004.
The Midwest Gift and Fudge House manufactures the best fudge in the world. They've discovered a secret recipe, and it allowed them to actually make the creamiest and most delicious fudge you're going to find anywhere. They also have a sugar-free type of fudge that has a great creamy taste and yet is safe for diabetics. The fudge is made daily, and there are over 30 to 40 different flavors in the store every single day. Midwest Fudge makes a perfect gift for any occasion and makes even a better treat for you. It's shipped out daily, so you're always guaranteed the freshest fudge, so why not place your order by calling 866-526-5419, that's 866-526-5419, or visit their website at www.worldfamousfudge.com, that's worldfamousfudge.com. Your order will be shipped out the next day, and of course, they're open 7 days a week. Why don't you stop by and visit them there from 9 in the morning until 9 in the evening? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Genesis Network, and of course, we've been talking a little bit about British politics. So there's basically three parties over there. They're the socialists or the liberals, and then they're the conservatives or the Tories, and then there's the Liberal Democratic Party, which are totally dedicated, apparently, to this idea of European Union. And then there's this other party. Do they have much of an influence at all? They're totally dedicated to staying out of the European Union?
Well, this is what is why it's getting quite interesting over here, because we are so between elections. So we have one in 2001. We think we're going to have one in 2005, next May. In between elections, small protest groups can, in fact, generate quite a lot of votes, quite a lot, because the people doing the voting know that it's not going to change anything, so they can express their gripes, their grouses, their grievances. If they have a real grievance against the government, they can vote for a protest party, and this sounds great. So this is what the UKIP has been doing. It's been winning some big voting sections on what we call by-elections, which is when an election, a little mini election, comes up between main elections. Whether that will go on when it comes to voting in the new government, I very much doubt. I think they will go back at that point next May to being really just what they are, a one-issue protest movement that people will vote for in very small numbers. But I have to say this, there is always a chance, Dr. Stan, that when it's a very close-run race, the little guy in politics might just have the controlling balance in votes. And this happened with the states, as you probably recall very clearly, in the winter of 2000, when in Florida, I think President Bush, as he became, was then candidate Bush. He won by some 550 votes, the final deciding state for the whole election. But Ralph Nader had won about 5,000 votes. And if those Nader voters had voted Gore, Gore would have won Florida and thus the White House. So that little handful of votes in Florida actually changed the course of history.
Well, I think it's the exciting times that we live in. I think that for that reason, people have to be involved in the process. But first of all, they have to become informed as to what the issues really are. And of course, one of the big problems we have here in the United States is we've got five mega corporations that control almost all of the major media outlets. So we're not divided equally between one side and the other. Literally all of the media is going in one direction, and there's very little opposition to the major policies of the what I refer to as the ruling elite, that seems to be hell-bent upon this idea of the New World Order and the New World Economy and the New World Currency and of course, the New World Religion. But right now, of course, we're facing the unification of the Western Hemisphere. Of course, as we're being told, just as you were 30 years ago, it's all about trade. It has nothing to do with sovereignty, but of course, they're not telling us the truth. Neither the Republican leadership nor the Democrat leadership here are telling us that this is a stepping stone to ending up exactly as you are as far as Europe today. Now, as far as the European Union is concerned, it would appear that they're going to have a police force and a military, and they're really going to become a completely independent or sovereign state?
Well, the most passionate Euro-federalists deny this. They deny it because they know it's not popular with the masses. I happen to think they're lying to us, and they have been for 30 years, and they think that I'm some kind of a mythomaniac, that I'm seeing ghosts and things that go bump in the night. There was always the jibe way back in the Cold War that there were people were seeing reds under the beds. And there were no reds under the beds. Well, no, because half of them were in the Defense Department, but never mind. And we had them in our intelligence services. But the idea then was there are no such things as communists in the West. Well, of course there were. And now we're being told there's no such thing as a conspiracy to unite Europe into some kind of an elite-ruled superstate. I happen to believe they're lying to us and that there is exactly such a plan. But I do believe it's coming unstuck. I think the wheels are actually beginning to come off their chariot. And it's not a few guys like me doing it. It's actually the broad masses of people of Europe. You can do a lot of things, Dr. Stan, covertly, but eventually when you come out, you have to face that great big mass called the people. And if the people decide they want their freedom, they can't be stopped. You can do what you like, but you can't be stopped. You can't stop it. So they have to do it by deception. And once you expose the deception, then usually the liars are finished. They don't last long once they're exposed.
Well, of course, they've done this very, very slowly and very gradually, though, like changing from the traditional system of measurements towards the metric system. I mean, they tried that here in America, and then they backed away, and they try it, then they back away, doing the same thing there until they meet resistance, and they back away. But they never change their course. They just simply temporarily move away from it. But they know exactly where they're going, and as long as they can keep people confused, why there will be no effective opposition. This is why I think it's so interesting that at least there appears to be a small but growing opposition, and it has to be organized because the other side is certainly organized. I believe they know exactly what they're doing, and they will demonize anybody who tries to tell the truth. Here in America, we say, well, they believe in black helicopters. Over there, I guess they say you believe in things that go bump in the night. Is that the English term?
I guess so, yeah. I think there's been a sea change recently, and I think it might be that the scales are falling from the eyes in Washington a little bit, because for many years, those of us who were skeptical about the plans here to create a superstate were disappointed to find that most American policy, particularly out of the State Department, was in fact against us, and that the American view was, well, it would be wonderful to have a united Europe, wonderful to have a great ally called one single Europe. We don't have to talk to 25 countries. Hell, we can talk to one single foreign state secretary over there and one single head of government over there instead of talking to 25. And wouldn't this be wonderful? What has happened, however, recently, particularly over Iraq, which was the catalyst, is that it has become quite plain that if Franco-Germany, the twin masters of Western Europe at the moment, if Franco-Germany united in one single kind of country, dominates the rest of Europe, it's not going to be an ally of a state. It's going to be your bitterest enemy. And that was never foreseen by the State Department. Mr. Chirac does not like you, and Mr. Schroeder in Germany does exactly what Mr. Chirac in France tells him to do. And they pulled the rug out from under the United Nations over the Iraqi invasion. They'll do it again. There is no love for America in France. You've got to hoist this aboard. So if there is to be a united Europe, and it's dominated by France, then God help America.
And, of course, the same thing, Spain now. The people first voted out the conservatives there. The socialists came in, and they immediately pulled their troops out of Iraq. So we are beginning to lose support throughout the world for our policies.
Well, I don't know about the world. There are some 30 countries that are assisting inside Iraq. I think only two of them are in combat, the Brits and the Americans. But I think there are others in there trying to act as, peacemakers or peacekeepers. There are some 30, so to speak, within the coalition, what is called the coalition forces.
Yes, but other things.
Better than it need be, better than it might be. It might have been two. At least it's 30. But obviously, Mr. Howard in Australia is fighting against the population who would like to see the Australian troops pulled out. Zapatero in Spain couldn't resist the idea of the Spanish troops pulling out. There's talk in Italy if Berlusconi, the conservative, falls and the socialists come to power, they'll pull the Italian contingent out, and so on. So, yeah, I mean, it does look as if in Europe, the USA doesn't have all that many staunch friends except the British.
In fact,
abandoning us to our fate is not smart.
Well, I think, of course, the British are the only ones who really stand with the Americans in Iraq. Yes, there are token units from these other countries, but never more than a couple of thousand from any of the countries, and many of the countries just have a few hundred people there. So it sounds very good, and we've got a coalition of 30 countries behind us. But, of course, don't you think a lot of that is more or less tokenism, because it's the American and the British boys who are dying, not predominantly the Italians or the people from other countries throughout the world?
That's true. A lot of them are in there, if you like, as tokens. I don't know what the Australians are in there. There are Poles in there as well. Occasionally we hear that someone from the Philippines was captured or kidnapped and didn't even know the Philippines were in there. But nevertheless, yes, most of them are small units. The British, to be fair to my own people, are holding down one of the southern third of the country and thus taking a hell of a lot of pressure off the Americans, who have, of course, the really worst job, which is the Sunny Triangle up in around Baghdad, which is the hotbed. But at least the Brits are holding down the southern third in a condition of reasonable peacefulness. It's getting unstable now. But yes, I think what it's fair to say, the Brits have been standing side by side with the GI now since whenever 1890. You know, it's been a long time. We're about the only guys left, I think, on the planet you can absolutely count on. But you will not be able to count on us if we are spoken for by French and Germans.
What is the...
And that will happen if we are subsumed into this coming Federal Republic of Europe.
Now, what is the attitude overall there in Great Britain as far as the Iraqi war? Are the people behind Tony Blair? Are they more or less neutral? Are they really solid?
I think the population was around 50-50. About the left wing, don't forget, the left wing is always what you might call the pacifist wing, and the conservative wing is always the pro-American wing. Broadly speaking, when it started, I think the people, 50% at least, accepted the assurances that Saddam was a clear and present danger to us all. Now, what has hurt matters is the fact that our own premier has been exposed as a liar. And a lot of people now are saying, well, I think we're down to about 65-35. 65 say, what the hell are we doing there? We were lulled, conned into, duped, deceived, into going to war on a false prospectus. Maybe we should pull. And I think only of the three major parties, only the Conservative Party is still rock solid behind America.
All right. Now, as far as these elections, you think they'll come up sometime in the middle of next year?
Well, yes, unlike you, we do not have fixed terms. We have a maximum of 5 years, but it is habitual for the prime ministers here to hold their elections after 4 years, the same way as you do with presidential elections. But Mr. Blair, if he wanted, could go on until 2006, because he won in 2001. But it's firmly expected that the decks are being cleared, so to speak. We know that funds are being allocated probably for an election campaign sometime next April, with a view to a voting date around May 2 next year.
Now, do you think that is because the pressure is coming from within his own party, from the Liberal Party, that he is going to have to get these elections because many of the Liberals have turned against him?
It could be. I don't know what his thinking is, because he's getting very strange. He had the party conference last week, and he made a very weird speech, which has led quite a few commentators to think that he really may need psychiatric help. So he's just had an operation on his heart. It may be that he needs someone to have a look at his thinking as well, because he has said some very weird things, like it kind of messianic. Now, I don't know whether the messianic thing goes down well in the States, but here we regard the guy who thinks that he has the finger of God upon his forehead as maybe a bit weird.
Well, of course, we hear our president saying how we are going to transform the world. And, of course, I don't think most Americans voted for our president to transform the world. I think we wanted him to take care of America. And then, of course,
Dr. Stanley, exactly the same. I said in an article I wrote yesterday, which will be published next week here in England, that we are not the ancient Israelites going through the desert following some half-crazy mystic towards the promised land that only he can see. We are the Brits, and we ask for good trains, good schools, good hospitals, good roads, crime-free streets, the ordinary things of life. We are not really interested in his messianic world conversion schemes.
Well, now,
so it could be that his own there's a lot of opposition inside his own party to this craziness, and it could be that they will go to him in the old-fashioned manner as it used to be when an officer had to slide down and give him a glass of whiskey and a pistol, one shot in it.
Well, let's hope that it doesn't come to that. But do you have a website where people could perhaps get some of your writings?
No, I have to confess I do not have a website, but I'm afraid I have to say, with all due immodesty, there are about 500 sites have been set up in my name.
All right.
So if you bang my name into a service provider,
right,
I think about 500 webs come up with just about all that I've ever written or said on them somewhere. Just have to do a bit of hunting.
So would they look under Frederick Forsyth? Would that be the name?
That would be it.
All right, fine. Well, of course, our listeners out there, let me suggest that you get Mr. Forsyth's writings. He's very well known.
You've got an awful lot of stuff, Dr. Stan.
Right. Well, I think it's so important that there are rational voices out there trying to reach the people and trying to get them to understand that we got a real problem. You have a problem in England. We have a problem in America. But our futures are intertwined. There's no way that if England gets into trouble, America is going to get into trouble. If England loses its national sovereignty, I fear America will lose its national sovereignty as well. So what are the people over there doing? Are they mainly just talking at the present time, trying to work through this new political party that you feel probably will not have a major impact upon the elections when they come up next year? What can be done in England? What could be done here in the United States to stave off this move towards the loss of national sovereignty?
I'm not too certain about what can be done your side of the pond. Over here, I can tell you, basically, yes, the election is going to be crucial, because the polls, when polls are held, show around 70% of the people here want actually to not pull out wholly. That's the UKIP version. They want a total withdrawal, but they do want an end to any further integration. They want a repatriation of powers that have been sent over to be administered in Brussels, brought back here, like the law over our own fishing waters has been transferred to Brussels. We want that back. We want to be able to fish our own territorial waters before the stocks collapse, because they've been overfishing them criminally, and half of our fish are in a state of stocks collapse. So we want a lot of changes made. We want root and branch reform. A large majority votes for that. But when it comes to parlaying those poll results into political seats, bottoms on seats in the Congress, then it's kind of harder, because there are people, obviously, when they vote in a general election, they are borrowing a lot of issues, not one issue. They're voting Europe, yes, okay, but that's around priority number 9. They're voting better schools, they're voting better hospitals, they're voting roads that aren't clogged up by traffic gridlocks, they're voting trains that run on time, they're voting streets free of crime, they're voting an end to completely out of control immigration of foreigners. They're voting for a whole lot of issues, you see. So Europe in that kind of menu will be item 7, 8, maybe 9 of priorities. So every politician can't just go on one single issue. He has to go on the broad expectations of the people. And of course, they're very broad. They're the same as they are in the States.
I'm afraid, though, that if you lose your national sovereignty, that all these other issues, they will force you to have immigration. They will take away your ability to do what you want to as far as your society. But we're going to have to wait and see. Mr. Forsyth, thank you so much for being with us today. And I hope maybe sometime when as things develop, we can talk to you again.
Well, good to talk to you, Dr. Stan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the items that we have at Radio Liberty, which we hope that many of you will be interested in. So let me just play another one of our ads or two.
Commentators in Oklahoma City talking about the second bomb, the third.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to tell you about the Robinson Homeschool curriculum. This is a wonderful means of teaching your children at home and getting them out of government schools. The Robinson Homeschool curriculum is designed to give excellence in education. It's a program. It's on 22 CDs. Designed to take your child from grammar school all the way through high school graduation, and it costs $199.95. You actually get the lesson plans, you get the tests, you get the answers to the tests, you get all of the textbooks except for the Saxon math textbooks, a wonderful way to educate your children. Product. So if you need a good shortwave radio, consider the Sanjian 505 AM FM shortwave receiver. It comes with a 25-foot antenna, an AC adapter, a soft carrying case, and costs $149.95 plus shipping. You can read about the Sanjian 505 radio and some of the other great Sanjian products that we carry at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. You can order a Sanjian 505 radio by calling 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. Visit our website and consider purchasing a Christmas gift for a friend or someone you love.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
And we'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Mr. Frederick Forsyth, who's an internationally owned author. And, of course, to understand really what's going on behind the scenes, why the British are backing us in Iraq, why the United States backed Great Britain in the Falklands War a few years ago, you have to understand that there is a secret society that controls the leadership of both countries. It works in England through the Royal Institute for International Affairs, which is a front group for a secret society, just as the American counterpart, the Council on Foreign Relations, from which Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice and so many of the people, Paul Wolfowitz, they all come from the membership roles of the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, to understand the background of this, you need to get a book we carry called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, which is written by Bill Clinton's mentor. The book is called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. It was so effective that actually the the book was destroyed. The plates of the first half of the book were destroyed about 1967, so it couldn't be reprinted, because the last thing the elite wanted was for the American people to learn the truth. And, of course, we have the book now, a long, devious means by which it got back into print, but we have copies of the book available. We have an interview with Professor Quigley where he will tell you how the plates to his book were destroyed so that it could not be republished. That is in our four-tape set called The Secret Government, or, of course, you can get the book itself, The Tragedy and Hope, or you can get the Tragedy and Hope special that includes the interview with Professor Quigley and my book, which we've kept in print for many years. I didn't write it. It was written by the Council for the Reese Committee, which was commissioned to investigate the great tax-exempt foundations in the 83rd Congress authorized that. And, of course, what they found is the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Foundation and the Ford Foundation were instrumental in bringing communism to China and funding both communism and socialism. Why would they do anything that foolish? Wasn't foolish at all. We did not want the competition at that time. America was to dominate the world and use its financial and military power to bring about the New World Order and the New World Religion. And China was just a great experiment. Oh, 60, 80 million people died, but who really in America even has heard of that or really cares? 60 million people died in the gulags of Russia. Well, we financed the brutal tyranny there, but we can't tell the American people that. And when Larry McDonald, Congressman Larry McDonald, tried to do that, why, his plane was shot down. 007, Korean Flight 007. We have a four-tape set on Korean Flight 007. You need to get that. You need to get the four-tapes set we have on the secret government. You need to get Professor Quigley's books, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, and his second book, called The Anglo-American Establishment, that tells you how he found out about the secret society that works behind the scenes in both the United States and Great Britain. But what Professor Quigley missed totally, and he's far more brilliant than I will ever be, one of the most brilliant historians of modern times, praised by people like Samuel Huntington, who's chairman of the Department of History at Harvard University. But Professor Quigley missed the fact that behind this whole secret movement was the occult. And we talk about that in our book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. So you want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you want the graduate course, you'll get Professor Quigley's books, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, or The Anglo-American Establishment, or you'll get the Tragedy and Hope special, which includes Tragedy and Hope, the interview with Professor Quigley, and, of course, the book Foundations, The Power and Influence, which is one of the five most important books in my library today. And believe me, there are 20,000 books or more in the library. So you need to get this information. You need to help us get it out across America. We hope that many of you want to come to a meeting we're having here in the Monterey Bay area on the 6th of November, all day long on a Saturday, as we're bringing in outside speakers to try to bring you up to pace on exactly what's going on behind the scenes. And then, of course, hope many of you go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That, of course, you'll pray for America, that you'll pray for revival. You'll pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And don't forget that seminar on the 6th of November, all day long here in the Monterey Bay area. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.